The following programming is sponsored by
MBC Media.
The views expressed do not necessarily reflect this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group. Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist. And an eagle will fly, and it's gonna be here. When you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell, and it'll feel like the whole wide world is raining.
Good afternoon, Philadelphia. Welcome back to the Conservative Voice on WWDB AM 860. This is your host, Gary Heasley. I'm in the studio again with Ada Nestor. Ada,
Hello. Welcome
to Hour 2.
Love it. It went by super fast the first hour.
You know, we're doing 30-minute segments and running out of time.
I know. Which is kind of crazy because a lot you don't get 30-minute segments or 30-minute interviews with people on a lot of different shows. And literally, we could go an hour with every one of these guests and not lose anything to talk about.
No, there's no downtime.
No.
You know, it's fascinating. But it goes to what we spoke of in the beginning of the first hour, that we have a world that is just so dynamic right now, and everything is crucial breaking news. It's there's never a boring day
ever.
So I'm glad we get a chance to do this and to talk to the folks out there about what's going on, because I think they're probably getting a slightly different perspective, not just because of our own perspectives being unique, but also because we're bringing in these folks that have deep knowledge and giving them time to talk.
Well, and it saves us from all the phone calls sometimes, though, doesn't it? Because I feel like I've been on the phone a lot this week, especially with what's been going on between Russia and Ukraine. I know you've been on the phone a lot. I know that we have both shared similar messages to others to allow them to calm down and to not panic quite yet. But it was time consuming this week to deal with this drama.
Well, and we're fortunate in the threads that we talk to people on and social media, we're connected to some folks that are pretty deep thinkers. And so we do get to draw upon the collective wisdom, but getting here and doing this is a great privilege. We're happy to be able to do it. And if you would like to join this conversation, you can do so by dialing 888-329-3306. And, you know, we've taken a lot of calls over the last few weeks, more than I think we were getting before, as people have been listening more and kind of getting the vibe. But if you want to add a comment, please give us a call. Again, 888-329-3306. And so let's turn to the geopolitical. Now, to remind people of the plan here for our second hour, the first half hour we're going to spend with Darren Gobb. We're going to talk about all the matters going on around the world, you know, this incredibly frightening week we've had. And then the second half hour, we're going to be with Bobby Eberle from Fort Bend County, Texas, who's also done a lot of national media and who's just a great mind to tap into to understand better what's happening around us. So this week, and I covered this last night at our Keystone Town Hall, this week it seems like the administration now facing the reality of Donald Trump coming into office is beginning to act, as I keep saying, like a cornered raccoon, that's got rabies and it's lashing out and foaming at the mouth. And I mean, it's just...
I go with snake, cornered snake.
Well, that's a good one too.
Yeah.
But if you've ever been around a rabid raccoon...
I haven't. That's why I don't
quite,
get it.
Yeah, there's something not quite like it. And that's what these people seem to be. So let's get into this second discussion. We all know that this week, the Biden administration allowed Ukraine to begin sending these long-range missiles deep into Russia.
Yeah.
Now, there was no event that I could identify that caused that to happen, that somehow the dynamics of the battlefield changed. I put the map up of the battlefield last night. If you layer the battlefield map from a year ago to the battlefield map from last night to a year and a half ago, the lines haven't changed much.
Right.
There have been battles over very important areas, and there have been a lot of people killed. But the overall strategic positioning of these two forces has not dramatically changed, and yet somehow now's the time we want to ramp this up. And of course, then the British dutifully follow. And it is my belief that Ukraine cannot fire these weapons without U.S. assistance. But to get a deeper insight into that, we want to bring on Darren Gobb, who's on with us right now. Darren, welcome back to the Conservative Voice.
Gary, Heda, always great to see you, or I should say hear you. Happy to join.
Hey, listen, I want you to know, I saw snow this morning, okay? We saw snow here in Pennsylvania this morning. It didn't stick. It's not on the ground. We only saw it falling from the sky. But I really wanted to let you know, I was excited to tell you that we did see some snow. thrilled.
Oh, outstanding. And we're watching it come down right now. So
Gary mentioned that we used U.S. missiles in Ukraine fired into Russia. But I think one of the important things is immediately following that, they used British missiles to fire into Russia as well this week. So both the U.S. and the U.K. were kind of thrown into this conflict. And from what I understand, there were actual UK representatives on the ground in Ukraine when those missiles were used. Of course, this is just like the scuttlebutt we're hearing on the streets. But, you know, there certainly seems to be an escalation or an attempt to bait Putin into an escalation in an effort to interfere with the peaceful transition of power we're expecting to see in 2 months. And I can only imagine what your insight is on this issue because, you know, we've had these conversations. I think we're all kind of aligned in what we're looking at and what we think is happening. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on what we saw this week.
Oh, sure. Well, first of all, yes, you do have to have some specialized knowledge of both British and American targeting methods to include some security clearances in order to be able to access the necessary information to adequately and effectively target something like an ATACMS missile, which I've worked with. I've been near them when they've launched. It's quite memorable. And, you know, for example, there are payloads on an ATACMS missile that will destroy everything within a grid square if you use the right thing. So this is no small thing. But it is also not the kind of a big thing that will change the course of this war. It is ultimately part of a plan that you're not getting into the specifics of it. I wrote about 2 years ago and said that, you know, in the event basically of a Trump victory for the presidency and a change of power, that the current administration and the deep state globalists and all those are going to try to do something and create a conflict that handcuffs the administration's hands and doesn't let them get to the priorities of the American people and the mandate that we sent. So Russia countering with this intermediate range ballistic missile that looks like a new type. When I've talked to the experts in missile work, they say this looks like a new type. Is entirely expected.
Right.
And nobody should be shocked that Russia said, okay, you're going to do this to us. We'll do one back to you. Who's the mature one in the room at this point and has the calm mind to be able to not expand this? Because all this is a strategy for expansion, not a strategy to end it, and whether through victory or some other means.
Did you see the videos of those missiles hitting Ukraine overnight the other night?
Have you seen those videos? I was actually counting the warheads.
Right. So my question is, though, I didn't see explosions when they hit the ground. So were they missiles that did not have live warheads on them? Or why did we not see an explosion when those missiles hit the ground? Was it a sign just saying, hey, I can touch you and I can reach you and you're not going to be able to stop me? And this is just a warning this time.
Well, it did cause significant damage, and that's the key, is that it did a lot of damage and virtually destroyed one of the major manufacturers of weapon systems within Ukraine itself that they were using to supply their own efforts. Not all explosions are equal, especially if they actually penetrate a building. You may not be able to miss it. They're not going to look like the Hollywood thing. And I've been talking to some folks about that. And there's a lot of technical specification work that people can go into. You know, what exactly kind of missile was this? What kind of payload did it have on it? What was its range? And you can get into, you know, what's a treaty violation, what's not a treaty violation. Are they playing games around the edges of all this? But ultimately, it comes back to, we expanded the conflict by allowing the use of our systems inside Russia for no strategic or tactical purpose. And Russia replied exactly as you would expect. And where are we going with this? It looks like exactly what I predicted 2 years ago.
Yes.
That this regime would do everything in its power to make sure that that America and its priorities cannot be addressed in a new administration.
What's interesting...
And by the way, that's on my Substack. If you go to my Substack, my article is on there that talks about all of this.
Yeah. Tell us where that is again.
Yeah, what's the name of the article? Do you have the title up?
I don't have the title up, but it's basically darrengobb.substack.com, and then it talks about America's time of greatest risk is just around the corner. And I wrote it 2 years ago, published it about a week before the election when it looked very obvious that Trump was going to run the field on the election for the most part, and told to try to get it to in the hands of people who need to see it and be like, hey, you need to have a long range vision on this and know what's going to happen and what's going to come, because this is what I have been doing since I was 16 years old.
So we'll
playing global chess.
And we'll find the link to that article and we'll get it around on the threads and social media. You know, I will tell you, I think this has been the most terrifying thing that they've done, this idea of this going deeper into Russia and then provoking a Russian response. I a lot of people expect them to take bold action. They really, you know, everyone is saying they aren't going to leave quietly. They're going to do something drastic on the way out. We know how important this war is to the profits and the geopolitical ambitions of the globalists. And we know that they're terrified that they're about to lose control of the U.S. State Department and military. At least that's seems to be quite obvious. But then when they actually begin ramping up this war, it I think, struck a real nerve in the American people. I think people became very afraid.
Well, and, yeah. I mean, I'm never one to advocate that people should ever fear. what they need to do is get busy and expose everything as they... And,
hey, listen.
I mean, I've tried to get on to Tucker's show. I've tried to get on to any show I possibly could for years and just say, hey, here's what's coming, and now it's here.
My saying has always been, be prepared and never scared. If you're prepared, you're not scared. So stop being fearful, right?
Right. That doesn't necessarily mean don't be prudent.
Right.
It doesn't mean don't fail to call out the evil. Don't, you know, magnify the truth. Now, don't fail to magnify the truth. Go ahead and do that. But ultimately what it comes down to is I think people are realizing that it seems like there's these globalist entities who are pulling the strings of the Biden, Harris, and all the deep state in D.C. who, for some odd reason, have a fear that people might live in peace and prosperity.
Exactly.
And God forbid that happen.
And freedom. You know, the question we asked last night at the town hall is could anybody come up with a single reason, a single explanation of this attack that is somehow beneficial to a child from Philadelphia or Coatesville or Scranton or Pittsburgh? Is there anything that's going on right now that's in the interests of the American people, ramping up the war, advancing all these generals at a rapid pace, appointing all these Supreme Court, all these federal judges who will be appointed for life? The group that seems absent from all of this consideration are the American people.
Always
the absence of the American people. And I guess sometimes it seems like it's best to give a comparison. And I want to go back to your map, your war situation map, the war room.
Yeah.
For those who are history buffs like myself, I mean, this is exactly World War One, 107 years later or so. Stagnant lines.
Yes.
Trading meters of territory instead of miles of territory, with the exception of a little success in Kursk, which is what this attack was supposed to be about. Mm-hmm. And this attack makes as much sense as being in World War One and someone saying, hey, let's launch 6 missiles at Berlin. That'll end the war. No, that's really not going to do that. And by the way, let's go ahead and pile on, too, because most people are... You know, they may mention or they're going to gloss by the significance of the authorization to use anti-personnel mines now and authorize their use. So what does that do? Well, there's about 100 nations around the country who were signed on to a treaty to not use those kinds of mines in conflict or any other time. We did not sign on to that treaty because of the conflict, ongoing, unresolved conflict, really, between North and South Korea and that DMZ. We wanted the freedom to be able to use those if something in Korea blew up, which, you know, the greater argument of whether or not we needed to get involved in that anyways is still out there. But now we're saying these 100 countries who signed that treaty and all this stuff saying, you know what, we're just going to go ahead and now we're going to scatter anti-personnel mines, potentially, around eastern Ukraine, and then we're going to say, but they're battery operated, and you know, in 48 hours to 2 weeks, they're going to go dormant. I don't think the people who say that kind of stuff know how mines are used. Yeah, they may go dormant, but that doesn't mean that people aren't going to pick them up, take them apart, and use stuff.
Right?
Right, that's right.
Or replace the batteries?
Well, or just be doing something, you know, innocent, man. I don't know exactly what could trigger these in any circumstance, but, you know, you go out and begin to build a foundation and you dig into one of these things. You're working in a field, digging a well, you dig into one of these things. Does dormant mean completely
disabled?
Yeah, completely disabled.
Because I still remember Princess Diana walking through the minefield when they tried to stop her. I think it was in Africa somewhere, maybe. So it's,
well, and also, by the way, someone can just, years down the road, is going to find one of these and someone's going to try to take it apart.
Yeah.
There's still explosives inside of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's right.
So what we're doing is telling the world, it's like, hey, we're going to continue down this road with a strategy that says we're willing to escalate, but we're not willing to do what's necessary to win or end this conflict. And the end might be, hey, Zelensky, Putin, get to the table. Let's talk this over. And maybe there's some land swaps. Maybe there's, who knows what that looks like ultimately. But at some point, war comes to exhaustion. Both sides run out of things, and you have to come to the table to settle things so the killing can just stop. Because right now, it's just killing. For what?
Yeah.
For no real purpose.
And Putin seems
Who's
to be
as a result.
Absolutely. And Putin seems to be telegraphing that he is willing to end this. He wants to sit down with Donald Trump. So everything I'm seeing is that if they antagonize him, he's going to respond, but locally in the conflict that they are already existing in. I don't see him extending the conflict to the U.S. or to the U.K. or to Poland, because I just haven't seen that behavior from him yet in this conflict. Am I completely off base there, or is he sitting there maybe thinking, if I can get to 2 months, if I can get to January 20th, we can get to peace?
Yeah, and this is not an argument of Putin's a good guy.
No,
he's a dictator. But the whole point is he's also operating off of real politics, which means you deal with the people and the reality in front of you. You play chess with the pieces you have. And sadly, right now, we're relying on Putin to be the mature national leader.
Isn't that crazy? Right.
And I think he knows that if he can get into January and get the new administration, there's a decent chance that we can resolve this thing to the best of our ability and move on, despite the destruction, despite how terrible it is.
Yeah,
you know, it just seems like he's the one that's recognizing the fact that let's end this thing. And Russia's done what I call very good strategic risk assessment going back many years.
Yeah.
They chip away at their edges. Georgia, Azerbaijan a little bit, the different stands in Central Asia.
Yeah.
In all this, they're making space for themselves a little bit at a time. This is just the first time they've gone this big on this scale, but I suspect if they come back to the table and say, yeah, we're willing to take the Donetsk region and retain Crimea, Ukraine, you can have the rest.
Yeah. Well,
for now.
I got a photograph sent to me this morning from some of the folks we communicate with, and it's this picture of this young, you know, beautiful Ukrainian girl, just a nice young kid. And of course, she died last night. We talk about this stuff from a geopolitical standpoint, which of course is important. It's very difficult for people to bring this down to the ground level and think about the Ukrainians who have been dying for now since 2014.
Yeah.
In this war.
In a conflict that started in the 90s. So there's so much nuance. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the thing. Gary and I talked about this just the other day. The difficult thing about these conversations is so many people live in a black or white place, and there is nuance in these conflicts. Same with Israel and Palestine. There is nuance that it is not as simple as good and bad. There are so many pieces of history and a timeline that goes back decades that totally explains how we got to this current place. And I mean, with Russia and Ukraine, it's Sullivan and Newland. I mean, they've been involved for years. So I think that a lot of people look really surface level. They get upset about what the media is telling them because the media's job is to upset them. And they want everyone in this vulnerable, manipulated state so that they can direct them to what's next. And honestly, look at what Zelensky has done. When was his term over? When was the next election supposed to?
A year ago?
Right. The next election that he delayed because they're at war. And when you look at what they're attempting to do right now, it does seem clear to me that they're weighing their options on how to interfere in January with the transition of power.
Oh, no question.
Yeah. So, yeah. And I think what you said is important. It's what is the reality of this to the average American besides wasting of their taxpayer dollars on no strategy,
right.
Spending of our military readiness overseas with no strategy? It's ask the questions, what are you willing to die for if called upon to do something? And I think that's a question we should all ask ourselves is, what is the average Ukrainian, however you define that, truly willing to die for in this global Game of Thrones between bad actors? Because if you're looking for corrupt governments, I'll give you Moscow, Kyiv, and Washington, D.C. So
right.
We're not standing on a pedestal.
No.
But
there's a point there.
That young girl, do you think that family was in the real politic world of saying, well, what's the greater role of Ukraine and Europe and Central Asia relative to Russia?
Right. Yeah.
We're
willing to sacrifice our daughters so that the ambitions of Anthony Blinken and his globalist friends can be offset against the opposing positions of the what? No, that's not what they're saying. But I think the number of dead in Ukraine now is about 600,000. I think it's a million casualties. Yeah. I've heard different numbers, but that's about where it is. Did those people have any reason to get involved in this? I mean, and it was 14,000 dead in the war in the Donbass, roughly 14,000. Well, those artillery shells were funded by us.
Yeah.
Those came from the United States.
Yeah.
So to your point that it's three bad actors, and we like to consider ourselves the global hero. Listen, if you don't like Putin and you think it's the U.S. State Department and military's mission to start cleaning up bad guys around the world, there is a long list of countries we're going to have to go to war with.
Seriously.
You know, if that's our mission, is to first to judge which leader is worthy of leading and not, which nation's government is worthy of remaining in power or not, and we're now to go around the world wiping out the bad guys, you know, setting aside the idea that we've got our own bad guys, it's an endless string. So it cannot be our foreign policy position that our role is to eliminate anyone who these people just don't like. And the death in Ukraine is it's tragic, and it's never mentioned. Nobody talks about it. Yeah. Nobody talks about the tragedy of these people's lives. And beyond the death, the destruction of their way of living, the destruction of their homes, the destruction of their communities. You know, this is simply an unacceptable path for us to be taking. When not one person can explain to me how this is, why was it so important that NATO be extended to the borders of Russia?
Well, antagonism.
No. From the standpoint of the American people, why?
Oh.
Right? What was the interest of a kid in Germany, some boy in Berlin, you know, because that's NATO too, some kid in Paris? How is it the benefit to those children to say, well, we've got to expand NATO up to the borders of Russia, knowing it's likely to trigger a war, and we have to keep biolabs in the country, and we have to do all these other things. We have to run the war in Donbass. We have to do all these things, pump billions and billions and hundreds of billions of dollars into this thing. How does this serve anyone in Western Europe or the United States? And the answer is already clear, it doesn't. So who's this about?
Yeah. This is about the desire to cover up a national crime scene.
Right.
And guard the globalists, the Biden administration, their involvement, and so many others like the Victoria and new ones you've already mentioned. So in the end, I mean, it's Ada already mentioned this goes back to the 90s. So let's just go straight back to the fall of communism, the Berlin Wall, and the Soviet Union.
That's right.
This entire thing with Ukraine has been gradually the process of Ukraine creeping westward and away from Moscow, which, mm-hmm. by the way, has murdered millions of Ukrainians, so who can blame them?
Right.
I think they would have had this settled themselves, the Ukrainians, had this decision settled for themselves if hands had been left off them to let them figure out for themselves what they want to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they become this chessboard for the, you know, Moscow and D.C. and Western Europe to figure out, you know, who gets to be your predominant influencer? Well,
that's right.
And that young girl dies because these people are playing games rather than just sitting back and letting the Ukrainians figure out for themselves what they want their country to be.
That's exactly right. And so now we've destroyed this nation, making huge amounts of money doing that. You know, we talk about the Minister of Defense that has now a $7 million estate in Spain and all these luxury cars, these hypercars that are running around places, yachts, all these things have been purchased with all this money, you know, weapons that have been sold around the world. We remember it had to be more than 2 years ago that the plane crashed, headed to Pakistan, loaded with U.S. weapons that had been sent to Ukraine. It's been an endless string of corruption and misdirection.
Well, and then Mitch McConnell comes out and says, listen, this money isn't going to Ukraine, guys. We're using it here on the military industrial complex companies, and then we're sending other stuff to Ukraine. And he said it on the floor of the Senate, like as if that was going to comfort us and make us feel, oh, well, that's fine then. No problem.
He believed that by coming out and saying that, Americans would get behind it. And a lot of this, and I believe this provocation this week is part of this, they want to elicit such a response from him.
Yeah.
They want to keep saying these things like that that they think are going to land with the American people because they want us to get behind putting NATO soldiers, meaning U.S.
American soldiers,
on the ground, on that front line, and creating a war we simply cannot extract ourselves from because then they've attacked the U.S. or NATO country.
Which then just makes it Afghanistan.
And by the way, here's a unique little thread to this whole thing, too, besides the fact that the globalists want the profits and they want the war to keep going and all this stuff. If someone is successful to the point where you're sucking the American military into a war in Ukraine that we can't define, that we don't even know why we're there, what's the American military now also not doing? Pivoting towards the greater threat of China, operating in a way that helps support the removal of all the illegal alien invaders in our own borders. So as we pull back this thing and look at where all the different threads of potential lead us, when you suck our military into something that has little strategic value, you take them away from things that absolutely do have strategic value.
Right.
And isn't it interesting? We are doing all of this to protect the border of another country while our borders remain completely open.
Undefended.
Right.
How does that make sense?
Yep. And by the way, that lesson is easy to see. Where does it lead to? Just follow the United Kingdom and France. We'll just give those two countries. Follow what's happening with the illegal alien invasion in those two countries and ask if we want that here.
There was actually an interesting thing that came out of Canada. So as, you know, Trudeau was recognizing that Donald Trump is coming in and that he is going to shut down the border and he is going to begin, you know, evictions, I guess we'll call them. Trudeau came out this week and said they would be taking a pause on accepting any migrants. And I think that's hilarious, to be honest. These globalists have encouraged this to the point of millions. But now that he knows that those illegal aliens in the United States might skip over the northern border to go to Canada and hide there so that they can avoid being deported here.
Yep.
All of a sudden, he doesn't want them. All of a sudden, it's not, you know, beneficial to his citizens.
And he's been facing more and more political pressure as this decade of nightmares of his policies have landed. So here's the good news. You know, there's good news.
Oh man.
The good news is that this ramp up, this escalation, this attack and this attempt to expand this war to bring NATO in is all as a result of the fact that we had an election that is changing out the leadership in this government, that the globalists and the leftists and the lunatics that have been running this government for the interests of this globalist cabal or whomever it is they're working for, because they have different bosses.
They're not working for us.
They're not working for the American people. And they see that the Americans are coming back.
Yeah.
So there will be leadership that has pledged its commitment to act in the interests of the American people. And that should seem like a silly thing to have to do. But this entire conversation is about a government that is acting absolutely in contrast to its own people's interest without any regard to their benefit or long-term success or prosperity, safety, national security. All of that cast aside for this profit and geopolitical struggle for them to get control of more assets. You look at the vast land, resources, and people in Russia, and you realize what the prize is that they're seeking, and they can't get it without the United States military getting it for them. So the good news is that we only have, I don't remember how many days,
Two months.
I'll call it 60 days.
Yeah.
Until inauguration.
It's the 22nd.
And then these lunatics like Anthony Blinken and the Jake Sullivans of the world, I mean, they're going to be removed from office. And
Newland already stepped down, I think.
Newland's out.
Yep.
We have them removed from office, and we'll have a chance then to get people in those offices that, again, have pledged their loyalty to the Constitution and the American people. And that's a dramatic change.
It is. And I'm thrilled to be part of that change. I've offered myself on many things because I don't want to go to D.C. if that's where service is required to do something, then I'll do it. If not, then so be it. Either way, I believe every American at this point, the last thing every American should be thinking is the election's over. We won. Let's take a rest.
Now
is the time to double down and get out there. And I'm doing the best I can on Rumble, Substack, and DL Gob on Twitter. Other than that, I'm in Montana watching it snow and playing with my cats.
Well, but and in addition to that, you made a trip down here to spend a couple of days with us here at a Keystone Town Hall, and you came into the studio for a longer session on the Conservative Voice. And we greatly appreciate the time you spend with us, because this conversation helps us put this into context. You know, not everyone has stood next to these missiles as they fire and understands the nature of them and how they're controlled and all that. So Darren, we greatly appreciate your participation in these conversations. Thanks for joining the Conservative Voice.
Yeah, always a pleasure to join you. You guys have a great day.
Thank you.
So I often say the conversations we're having are insane.
Literally.
We're talking about a government that's not acting in the interests of the people.
Listen,
who would ever have thought that?
Back in the day when I was young and naive and I only got my information from the MSMs, particularly MSNBC, I was a big MSNBC supporter up until like 2018, actually, and then I stopped. Although I'm watching them again, it's really enjoyable to watch Morning Joe right now because of everything we're seeing. But I couldn't understand why other countries and citizens of other countries had such a deep-rooted hatred towards America. And I'll tell you what, these last 8 years have really allowed me to see it from a different perspective. And when you really dig into the root causes of some of these geopolitical conflicts, then you really come out with a different view. And while I certainly don't think Americans are evil or terrible people, we've certainly been led by some monsters. And they've made some very bad decisions for, I think, personal or geopolitical globalist reasons. And
well, it's either an ideology or they're getting paid. I mean, you know, when you look at these people that go to China and make a bunch of money in private equity and these other things while their spouse sits in the Senate, or these relationships with private equity firms like Joe Biden has, where he gets his son gets all these benefits, board meetings and investments in private equity funds that they, you know, for him and his and John Kerry's son, who don't have any private equity experience.
Right.
It's just it just doesn't
energy,
work.
Energy. Right. Yeah.
So getting back to the good news is that all of this is in reaction to the transition of this government to a new set of policies.
Yeah.
And we spent a bunch of time last night at the town hall talking about what those policies are. And when you start going through them in detail. I mean, when you start really reading the policies again, which I think many of us have done some of, but it gets kind of exciting. And, you know, the first policy is seal the border and stop the migrant invasion. This comes off of Trump's Agenda 47 page. And so what I want to get into now is more about this Trump mandate and how it rolls out. And to do that, we have, fortunately, on our line, Bobby Eberle, who's from Fort Bend County, Texas. We've had Bobby on before. Bobby, welcome to the Conservative Voice.
Thanks. It's great to be here again. Always love it.
I'm guessing it's not snowing there.
It is not snowing. It's a little cooler today, which is always welcome down here. So, but no, I do not think we'll see snow. I can't remember the last time I saw it, but it's a great day.
You'll have to come visit during the winter for a town hall and an in-person show, and you'll get to see some snow later.
You know what? Gary's been working on me.
Oh, good.
And I'm gonna do it. I think it would be a lot of fun.
Oh, it'd be great.
We'll find a date and we'll make that happen.
Yeah, awesome. That'd be really fun. So you know this list of policies. When you read it, it comes off as just common sense. That's the beauty of it, is that anybody in the country can read these policies and say, oh, that sounds like a pretty good idea.
Sense. Yeah.
The only thing that sounds strange, as we said a minute ago, is that these aren't our policies now, right, that you have to have an election to get these put in place. Bobby, I mean, so we've got this mandate. What do you think of this? I mean, what are the odds that this actually gets implemented, these policies become reality?
Well, yeah, let me address the common sense part really quickly, because I think it was last week, I don't know what outlet did it, but there was a really eye-opening chart, very simple chart, but it kind of destroyed the whole Democrat narrative that, you know, these in the Biden-Harris too of MAGA extremists, you know, far-right extremists, and it just showed policy trends and national sentiment over the years with the so-called middle of the road tracking very closely to what would be considered the conservative view. And over the decades, it's the Democrats that just took this nosedive to the far left. But they're the ones who control the media. Right. And so their perception is that those guys, if someone's getting farther away, right, it could be they're going in a direction or it could be you're going in a direction. And they fail to see that it's themselves that we're moving. So everything to them looks extremist. And this election was about kind of not only our America First movement, but the middle looking over and seeing their you know, conservative brothers and sisters pretty close to them, and then way out there, you know, there's boys and girls restrooms, there's open borders, there's foreign policy fires everywhere, and people just think, hey, you know what, this is a little nuts, this is crazy talk. And we want just common sense. And that's why, Gary, you know, you look at these policies, even reforming, you know, the tax code, no tax on tips and these other things to get people going again. It just seems commonsensical. And that's really good. So I think with these types of policies, coupled with the fact that we have this kind of new dynamic where Trump is in and then he's out. Right, he's in for 4 years and then he's out. It's like, let's really just do what we need to do. And I think you're going to see a lot of movement. Congress is going to be on board because we have this national mandate. And if they're not, I don't be surprised to see some full on public shaming.
Yeah,
and on a way that we haven't seen before. And I think there's a good chance to get these in there.
So. But the public shaming piece is part of it, right? I mean, the reality is if the American people go back to sleep, this agenda is going to fail. Trump cannot win on his own. Can't win.
What's interesting, though, is you say that we're trying to get back to this like sense of normalcy, the rational, logical way that we used to live. But what did we see this week in the House? We saw an absolute fight over who's using which bathrooms, which really shouldn't even be under consideration. And towards what you were saying, what did we see as a result towards Representative Mace? Threats, anger,
right,
the media trying to drag her for saying, hey, let's just have women in the ladies' room. Like it's, they didn't learn. Yeah. Did they not learn anything from November 5th?
Well, no, they did not.
They did not. And here's the thing is that there's this certain foreign element, right? Just this unrecognizable element. And it's called the American people. They can't relate to them, right? They want to control them. They can't relate to them. And they just think that, okay, they did their thing. They sent this message, but us, you know, the governing establishment elite, we're still going to do our thing. And so now it comes to Congress, that governing establishment elite, rhinos and Democrats. But it's just a new paradigm where people are speaking up and Nancy Mace is speaking up and others, you know, Senator Dane saying my pronouns are Republican majority.
That was great.
And things like that.
Yeah.
And then even Johnson, now whether his spine was, you know, freshly grown or rented for a day, I don't know. But he came out with that statement, which was very well worded about the bathrooms, and it's just people have had enough. That was our whole campaign strategy in my county that we flipped to red, was had enough, vote Republican. And you're seeing that more and more of people speaking out. Now, again, whether it's real backbones or rented, we'll see. But yeah, the Democrats, when it comes to their own backyard or the establishment's backyard in D.C., they're like, oh, wait, you're bringing that stuff here? That America First, you know, common sense stuff here? And yeah, they're going to be fighting it for a while.
So for your fight in your area, you're saying that you actually stood up for the issues?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. So in my county, it was one that was just tossed away, that it was a blue county now, and because we had no Republican victories in 2018 or 2020. And I came in, and we came in 2022, and we changed the tone, and we split with the Democrats basically 50-50. And this time around, we were focused on a massive ground game, this bringing people to the common sense approach of had enough vote Republican. And then the other part of it, though, was that the backbone side, the having a spine side, saying we're not going to let these Democrat scandals or these they tried their same playbook on calling us racist and stuff. Oh, yeah. So we're not going to let any of that slide. I'm going to put out a statement as the county chairman blasting this Democrat or pointing out this scandal. And these made local and even national news, to where when we were block walking, knocking on doors, people would talk about this or you know, Democrat A or Democrat B, and in the scandals had penetrated them from the news coverage. And so that's when I knew that, hey, things are going to be different. And we had 15 competitive races, and we went 13-2 in those. And just, you know, really, really set a tone. So it was a great election for us.
That's incredible. Maybe you can come up here and help us in Chester County, because we're not standing up for issues and our local candidates are not winning. And it's polite surrender, even though these people are calling us horrific names and saying horrible things about us. So, you know, and those of us who do stand up and speak up are, you know, treated pretty poorly by the party, I would say. So it's unfortunate to see that. And then it's so frustrating to see people like you out there fighting the good fight and standing up for these common sense issues, like, you know, transgenders in bathrooms, porn in elementary and middle schools. These are pretty basic things, I think, that are, you know, very important to take a stand on. And unfortunately, we just don't see that here.
Well, it's not just in one county. It's all of Southeast Pennsylvania,
yeah.
Really.
No, I don't want to beat up Chester County.
And when you look across the country, I think I think where they are having impact, it's because they're doing what we call selling a product with features. In other words, you're talking about the issues and giving people a reason to go vote.
Yeah.
And the places where the Republican Party is failing and the Democrats are advancing is where the Republicans just execute that strategy you mentioned, which we call polite surrender.
Because if we're nice and we stand for nothing, everyone will like us, right?
Right.
No.
Right.
That's actually not how it ends up working out.
Exactly. And gosh, you guys nailed it. And even when we stand for something, right, we stand for good things if we don't fight
right.
for them. Because the Democrats are going to tell their lies and everything. Who's going to counter that? I mean, you can't rely on the average voter to do all that research. And you've got to do your hand. And running a good campaign is both. It is what we call the amplify and suppress strategy. We amplify our good, and then we hammer the Dems to suppress them to not want to vote simply because they learn that their candidates are bad. You know, we had people indicted and stuff on the Democrat side, and guess what? We pointed it out, and we encouraged the two losing candidates even to embrace this. It's like, look, you're running against someone that's got some negatives. You've got to bring it out as you're doing this. Yeah, no, nah, I don't want to. And guess what? That's why we went 13-2 instead of 15-0.
Yep.
And, you know, that was the only reason. I mean, these two, one it lost by 890 votes and the other by 2,000 out of 340,000. That's how close it was to a clean sweep. But again, you've got to differentiate yourself from your Democrat counterpart too. And and no one's going to, the Democrats aren't going to bring up their negatives.
Right.
So someone's got to do it. And we should embrace that. It's not dirty politics. It's getting the word out there that, hey, if you vote for this person, this is actually who you're getting. And here's our guys, and they're awesome. And but it needs the party and the candidates to kind of embrace that strategy. And if that can happen, you can get some good results.
And it's interesting because they're going to attack us anyway. They're going to attack us with however they feel like attacking us, whether it's one of the isms, calling us racist, sexist, whatever, transphobic. Or they're going to do what they did to Sean Duffy this week, which was, oh, when he was in his 20s, he partied a lot. So I don't know if he can be transportation secretary. But these are the kind of things that you just have to look at them and say, that's silly. That's absurd. Who didn't party in their 20s? Like, you know, he has 9 kids now or however many kids he has. Obviously, he settled down. But they're going to say whatever they're going to say to try and advance their message. And a lot of times it's smoke and mirrors. So you just withstand it. You stand up to it, right?
You've got to fight back. And the other thing too is, you know, in the larger thing, like nationally, right? We talk about the establishment or this uniparty and everything. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's not, and that I know for a fact goes into the state level stuff, government, legislatures and stuff like that.
For
maybe
sure.
At the county level, a better way to describe it might be like the good old boy network, where they were used to winning by, you know, kind of doing deals and stuff like that, even playing nice with the Democrats.
And they get contracts and all that.
Yeah, right?
Right.
But this is different. These Democrats will come at you, and if you roll over, they'll steamroll you.
Yeah. They're brutal.
There's none of that anymore. You have to fight back, or else we will be a blue county over here if we use the old tactics.
Well, that's where Fort Bend County was clearly headed. I mean, people think of Texas as this sort of shining red bubble. It's not. Fort Bend County had Democrats in charge of their county commissioners, right? Down there, it's called a county judge. And there's been a fascinating story with the fall of this guy named KP George, who literally had to fake racism in order to try to maintain his position. Just crazy. But you had, of course, Harris County completely controlled by Democrats, as far as I could tell. And, I mean, you know, it is not clear to people outside of Texas that that's what's going on. You have the same fight there we had here. Now, one candidate, and this was really unique, one candidate up here who's been very, very successful. This guy went and had something like, I don't know, 2 to 4 live events in Southeast Pennsylvania for months with him and his surrogates. This guy talked about real issues. I mean, and he talked about it in ways that even made people uncomfortable because they had to face them and think about the issues. And, and this guy ends up winning the state. You may know him. His name is Trump.
Right. You know, and that's the deal, Gary, is that we don't have that part of it, you know, in the battleground to see these candidates actually there and seeing them doing a ground game and talking real issues and everything. So I'm glad that I'm not happy that it's so close in Pennsylvania, but to be there and to see these people in action had to be a thrill.
Oh, it was fabulous. I mean, it was astonishing how many events there were.
Oh my gosh, and such good events.
I was saying last night at the town hall, shouldn't we be having a Trump rally this week? Shouldn't there be another, you know, shouldn't this
we're
be?
We're in withdrawal, I think.
Yeah, I mean, we, you know, where's Vivek?
And Charlie Kirk and Tulsi Gabbard. I mean,
everybody on that list, you know, was there. And some of them that are very well known because they're in media all the time, and some of them not well known, but we know them. Peter Navarro was up here a bit, you know, who I think I have great gratitude for what he did on trade. And so it was incredible. But he went into Philadelphia where everybody said in 16 and 20, you know, don't go there because
don't
you can't
bother.
Win. It's not worth it.
You can't talk to them.
He went into these other counties that are completely controlled by leftists because, you know, where again, they were told don't spend a lot of time there. And other candidates have chosen not to do so. And what happened is the support, he didn't win Philadelphia. But if you look at the percentage of the voters in Philadelphia that supported Donald Trump, it was something like 15. I actually have the numbers. It was 15 in 2016. So in 2016, 15% of the Philadelphia population supported Donald Trump. In 2020, it was 18. Well, in 2024, it was 20. That two-point change, that makes the difference in winning Pennsylvania not. That is a critical level of support that he was able to pick up. But it didn't come free.
No.
He spent a lot of time and a lot of money in this market looking at what could be done to turn it around.
Again,
penetrating.
Though, he didn't spend over $1 billion to lose the race. Right. So a lot of his media and a lot of what we saw even here in Southeast Pennsylvania was earned. It was grassroots people standing on corners in North Philly waving flags and then standing up to people who confront them and say, why are you supporting him? And giving really great answers as to why they're supporting him. And it's in different communities than what we've traditionally seen coming out in force to support the Republican candidates. So all of those things working together with the constant events that we were seeing in Southeast PA really changed the dynamic here in terms of excitement for him. But we didn't see a lot of local buy-in or engagement with that, where, gosh, if I was running for state rep underneath Donald Trump on a ballot, I'd be Donald Trump Jr. out there on, you know, events and standing up for things. So it's unfortunate that it didn't translate thoroughly, although the state did go Republican in terms of our statewide offices.
Oh, well, that's fantastic.
Yep.
And that's a win. See those events and all of those people out there. And I was talking about this the other day. This is where the Democrats have to be in disarray again. And on another level, too, because not only were they, you know, Trump's wins the electoral vote and the popular vote and everything like that, but, oh, my gosh, people are starting to think Republicans are cool.
I know. We're going to be the cool ones again.
Yeah. Hanging out with Elon Musk and Joe Rogan and stuff, and they got to be killing themselves. It's like, we got to pay, you know, Oprah $2 million to show up, and these guys are just chilling. They're just having fun. People are doing Trump dance and stuff. And I mean, it's just gotta get them. It's like a fork inside you. They're just twisting the knife. And that part has been fun to watch.
It has.
Well, and I think we build that. The next 2 years, we have a governor's race in 2 years here in Pennsylvania. And Shapiro, who stayed silent while different county commissioners were agreeing to violate the PA Supreme Court and count ballots. So in two years, we have really important work to do. We can't let off the gas now, as Gary, you, and I think Darren had said. So we need to be even cooler for the next 2 years. Like, we need to keep hanging out. We need to keep growing our coalition with the new people.
We elevate that cool.
I know. We have to be the super popular ones by 2026.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, man. Well, I'm going to come down to Gary and give you some cool, all right?
Oh, yeah,
sweet.
You got to do that. We would have a great time. If you come to town, we'll do a town hall. We do these Keystone town halls. They're great. We get really great crowds. They're smart people. They're very informed. And then we do a session in the studio, and it's a great time.
Cool.
We are the fun, cool people, FYI. So.
I like it. Well, I love being on. It's great discussions, and we always approach it the right way. You know, this is serious stuff, but we're doing it so we can be happy, right, and have fun and enjoy life, and that's why we're doing it. And that's the other thing is what came across so fake is that the Harris Walls actually in the media, too, tried to make this the joy campaign.
I know.
Yeah.
I mean, where did the joy go?
Right.
The joy came to our side.
Exactly. And you could feel that. I don't know when it was, you know, mid-September, early October, but you could see Trump's demeanor change where it's like, okay, win or lose, we're having fun with this. You know, we know what's at stake, but he's having fun and joking around. And I, that kind of thing helps. That resonates with people where it also draws a great contrast to the weird things the Democrats would say or the way they say it or can't even get a sentence out, where Trump is not only getting sentences out, but he's joking about it, having some fun, self-deprecating humor,
right.
I think, at the Al Smith dinner and in other places.
That was
so
great.
Yeah, it was really good.
I think I know the moment their campaign lost the joy, if we're being honest.
Mm-hmm.
It was when Walz's wife went up to the podium and then mimicked the turning of the page repeatedly, like a mantra. I'm pretty sure that's when it happened.
Yep.
Time of death.
That was a big one. Yeah. Where people were like, what?
I know. Oh, it was creepy. Yeah, and her eyes were real wide. Yeah, that was the moment. I'm pretty sure that was the time of death.
Probably
for that
not
campaign.
Her best moment.
No.
Probably not her best.
Well,
yeah, and then, okay, so let me do my part of it. For me, I think it was Walls in the Elmer Fudd-looking hunting outfit. Can't even work his gun, trying to be a man. Like, they couldn't figure out how to relate to men because they demonized them so much. Then when they tried, it's like, let's hunt, but I can't hunt, or let's be tough, they can't be tough.
That's right.
A mess.
Hey, Bobby, thanks for joining us again on The Conservative Voice. Always a great conversation. We appreciate it, and look forward to seeing you up here in person.
All right, fun time.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.